from KMXT and Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the Board of Fish has opened state waters in the Western Aleutians. It's a tricky science trying to guess the salmon return to Upper Cook Inlet and just how big is the economic benefit of commercial fishing to Southeast. All that and more in the search for fishermen's wives with big personalities. Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
This week, the Alaska Board of Fisheries adopted an emergency petition filed by the City of Adak to open state waters in the Western Aleutians to commercial fishing. The waters in the region have been closed since January 1st due to federal regulations meant to protect the endangered western stock of Steller sea lions. The City of Adak filed the petition in December, and it requested that vessels under 60 feet be able to fish Pacific cod within 3 miles of Adak's shores, covering the area from the western part of Atka Island to the middle of Tanaga Island. The city argued that there has been no decline in the Steller sea lion population in that region, and that the total closure of the Pacific cod fishery would have a devastating economic effect on the community, which relies on fish taxes for revenue. The Board of Fish spent 4 days discussing the issue in Anchorage, and Wednesday morning they unanimously approved the petition, giving the city a 120-day reprieve from the federal regulation. The decision limits the fishery to 58-foot and under longline vessels and 60-foot and under pot, trawl, and jiggers. Doug DeMaster is the science director at the National Marine Fisheries Service Alaska Fisheries Science Center. He says that the decision to open those waters could trigger another Endangered Species Act consultation and lead to a new biological opinion.
If the assumption made in the biological opinion was that the parallel fisheries in the state would be managed according with the federal regs that are in place. If that isn't the case, so if there's a difference between the management and state waters of the and federal waters of these parallel fisheries, then that would likely change the background environment, and that would require consultation.
The closures of the Pacific cod and Atka mackerel fisheries has been a considerable point of friction between the National Marine Fisheries Service and the commercial fishing industry. Over the summer, NIMS released its biological opinion on the western stock of Steller sea lions. It determined that malnutrition could be a factor in their decline and closed off the region to commercial fishing under the Endangered Species Act. Since then, the state of Alaska and a number of commercial fishing groups have filed suit against the federal government in an effort to open the affected fisheries. The Coast Guard has repositioned helicopters and crew from the Kodiak Air Station to the Pribilof Islands in the Bering Sea for the duration of the winter fishing season. Petty Officer Jonathan Lally says the repositioning cuts about 6 hours of response time by basing aircraft on St. Paul.
Coast Guard deploys two MH-60 Jayhawk helicopters and their crews to St. Paul to provide a more rapid response, you know, should the need arise. We also have an HH-65 Dolphin helicopter that forward deploys to the cutter that is out in the Bering Sea that's doing the patrol. That way you have assets that are able to deploy and respond quicker in the case if there is a search and rescue case.
Marine safety detachments in Kodiak and Unalaska recently conducted safety training with the Bering Sea Crab Fleet. Examiners look for overall stability. Coast Guard reports that it's been 5 years since a crab vessel was found overloaded with pots. But there are still deficiencies, they say. Expired safety equipment is the most common violation found during inspections. Spot checks are planned to continue in Unalaska for vessels participating in the Pollock A season, which opens soon.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has released the 2011 Upper Cook Inlet sockeye salmon preliminary forecast. It sees a bigger salmon harvest than what was taken in 2010, but as KDLL's Ben Stanton reports, last year's forecast was off significantly from the final tally.
Area biologist for Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Jeff Fox, says while the forecast looks good, the question is its accuracy. And when I ask him to characterize how accurate it normally is, he says...
Oh, anywhere from a couple percent off to a couple hundred percent off.
A year ago, the forecast called for a projected harvest of sockeye that wound up about 1.3 million fish short of the actual figure. That was because of a higher than expected total run of salmon. For this year, the total run is expected in a range from about 4 to about 10 million fish. That makes the target number for the run at 6.4 million.
When you subtract escapement, we don't know exactly what the escapement goals will be right now because some of that gets set by the Board of Fish, which will happen end of February, beginning of March. So when you subtract that, that's going to leave a harvest of probably somewhere between 4.4 and 4.8 million to everyone, sport, commercial, personal use.
On the high end of the forecasted harvest for this year, it would be up to 1 million fish above the 20-year average. That figure may wind up being off, but Fox says it gives user groups a rough idea of the year.
So we kind of use it to start the season and from there assess things with the offshore test fishery to kind of gauge where about in the return we are. And, you know, then we, by mid-season or so, we're just monitoring escapements and trying to maintain them within the ranges we're trying to achieve. So the forecast isn't really for us so much as it is for the users. Primarily, the processing industry really wants them. Gives them an idea how many people to hire, how many boxes to buy, that kind of stuff.
Fox says usually by this time of the year, his office has received many inquiries about what the forecast will look like.
Oh, about a month ago, we started getting some of the sport users from, especially out of state, wanting to know what the forecast is, so kind of gauge whether they want to come up and shoot for the keen eye or go somewhere else kind of thing. So, yeah, a good forecast always brings more people of all users here.
Several types of forecasting methods are used to base the predictions on. Fox says that's the case again this year, but they've put more weight on one particular forecast model, the sibling model.
You use last year's two-year-olds to predict this year's three-year-olds, and based on the percent of the total, that kind of thing. And that's basically what the forecast is built on this year. There are a few subtle differences this year. Usually there's three or four different kinds of models that are used. This year, all the other models suggest there would be less fish than the sibling model, but the sibling model is typically the most accurate, so that's why we're using it.
Fox says the run expected to the Kenai River is nearly 4 million fish this year.
This puts us in the middle tier of the Kenai. That's kind of what the sport industry is interested in. It's not so much that it's a 4 million or almost 4 million to the Kenai. It's the fact that we're going towards the upper end of the escapement goals rather than shooting for the bottom tier of the escapement goals. So they look at it, they'll probably get a six-fish bag limit and probably fish longer.
Fox says if the forecast comes to fruition, then it's likely that most groups will be relatively happy with the outcome. And he adds that if it's incorrect, he hopes there are more fish than predicted. The department usually has a good figure for how the run is going by mid-July. In Kenai, I'm Ben Stanton.
So what is the contribution of commercial fishing to Southeast Alaska's economy? Scientists with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Fisheries Service are trying to figure that out. NOAA Fisheries spokeswoman Julie Spiegel says the agency will send a questionnaire to selected fishermen and processors later this month seeking information about their operations.
If we have a good idea of the contributions that fishing and seafood processing bring to the Southeast Alaska economy, it will help decision makers, local and state governments, businesses, and fisheries managers to make the best possible decisions that they can to hopefully increase the long-run economic benefits to those businesses and the communities they operate in.
The voluntary survey asks about vessel or processor size, labor, and other operational costs, and what portion of business spending is made in Southeast. Spiegel says it's the first time NOAA has collected this kind of data about Southeast fisheries. Investigators continue looking for the reason a commercial diver died last week while harvesting sea cucumbers near Metlakatla. The man, whose name has still not been released, was working on the 68-foot fishing tender Island Dancer. On January 12th, Lieutenant Commander Marshall Newbury is with the Coast Guard's Marine Safety Detachment in Ketchikan.
We've looked at all the different local policies for these dive fisheries that are in effect and everything else, and from everything we can tell, the Island Dancer was following the rules and they were being safe. We're not sure what the cause of the accident at this point is.
Another diver was in the water at the same time, but in a different area. Newberry says the other three people on the Wrangell-based Island Dancer saw what happened.
They have communications with the diver. They could hear him breathing. He talked a few times before this happened, and then he surfaced. He surfaced for an unknown reason, kind of came up fast, and they saw him waving his arm, and at the same time, it appeared that he pulled his mask off. And then a few seconds after that, he went back under.
The crew pulled the man out of the water using his air hose, but could not revive him. Newberry says the man was diving in less than 60 feet of water. The Coast Guard is testing equipment, and the body will undergo a medical examination. Tuesday, an Arizona man died at sea while working on a longlining vessel. Horatio Gomez, 33, was fishing for Pacific Cod aboard the fishing vessel Ocean Prowler when he fell ill, according to Megan Peters, the information officer for the Alaska State Troopers.
One of the people on board wasn't feeling well yesterday, and he went to lay down in his bed. Over the next couple hours, people checked on him a few times. Then when they went to check on him again, they found him not breathing. They tried to resuscitate him, but their efforts were unsuccessful.
The vessel was located near St. Paul when the death occurred. It was scheduled to arrive in Unalaska around midnight Friday. Meanwhile, the search for a missing Unalaska fisherman continues into its third week. 56-year-old John F. Courage went missing on December 29th, and the Unalaska Department of Public Safety, the Coast Guard, and the Alaska State Troopers have been working to determine his whereabouts. At the time of his disappearance, Courage had been working aboard the fishing vessel Alaska Trojan. The vessel had been moored at the Crowley Dock in December, and Courage was tasked with conducting boat watch until the crew arrived. When the crew returned on December 30th, they could not locate Courage, whose personal belongings, including his wallet and identification, were found left in a stateroom. Courage was last seen at the Alaska Ship Supply liquor store. Sergeant Michael Holman says the police department gets requests for welfare checks frequently, but that missing person cases in Unalaska usually do not last this long.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
As we mentioned on last week's Alaska Fisheries Report, there are plans for a new fisheries-related reality TV show based in Alaska. Produced by Shed Media U.S. in Los Angeles for the Animal Planet, it's called Alaska Fishermen's Wives.
We're looking at a few towns right now. We haven't decided. You know, it's going to really depend on who we find and what. But yeah, Sitka's one. Petersburg, I heard, is good. That might be a great fisherman's town. So we are looking at a few right now. But we do just love Kodiak. It's everyone we've talked to has been great there.
That's Mark Neal, one of the producers of the show. Given the isolation of many fishing communities in Alaska, Neal says ideally all the stars of the show, and they're looking for five or six, will be from the same town.
We want this to be real, and if they have those organic connections, that's definitely the best way to go. But yes, if we did Kodiak, it would be wonderful if all the women are just located there. It just makes things easier, and it keeps it more real, and it's not having to put them in these inorganic situations where they're, you know, miles and miles and miles away to a different town.
The deadline for applying is February 4th. We've got Neil's email address linked to our website, kmxt.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KUCB's Fresh from Vacation, Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, KMXT's Jacob Resnick in Kodiak, KDLL's Ben Stanton in Kenai, KTOO's Casey Kelly, and Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld, both in Juneau. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.